straits, smashing blows against his shoulders and stomach. Randall used the spear as best he could to block the attacks, but the Yeti was so large, and the spear was so unwieldy up close. He soon realized it was useless. Randall put the spear away and began to weave his way through the blows. With its hands continuing to glow with that strange golden engraving, the Yeti struck again and again, earning himself many glancing blows, and an increasing number of serious ones that sent Randall staggering, seeing stars. As they continued to fight, Randall growing increasingly worried about his ability to hold on, the Yeti began to frown.
"You... how many lives have you taken in order to walk this far down this path?"
What was more surprising than the statement was the fact that Randedly's own heart dropped, and he smiled bitterly as he heard those words. He had not forgotten the innocent lives he'd taken. He had not turned a blind eye to the fact he chose a path that made him willing to kill for strength. Even in the Badlands, he had broken and shattered the lives of other spear users in order to test and enhance his own strength. In a way, Randedly was able to justify it, in the moment, because he knew they would do the same to him to grow stronger, and they bore him no ill will for being stronger than them. But when the facts of what he had done were presented to him, some of his sensitivities from pre-system Earth had grown numb in this place, but not all of them. The Yeti continued to speak, and Randedly realized there was some misunderstanding going on here.
"These strikes should seal the ether devoured from others. Why is it you haven't gone through withdrawal?"
Both of the fighters paused, looking deeply into each other's eyes for an answer. Randedly's mind raced. Ether devoured from others? Was that possible? Well, from the way the Yeti was talking, and its confusion now, it definitely was, which would explain more broadly why the heretic path existed. Randedly was not the typical recipient of it. He just found himself here because he possessed his own ether spring that wasn't the system-approved source of ether. But why? It seemed, however, that the Yeti was tired of Randedly's lack of answer and was determined to beat it out of him, if he had to, which was becoming increasingly likely as the chill worked its way deeper into Randedly's body, even as his mana was directed elsewhere. As the Yeti stalked forward and bulbs of ice formed behind Randedly, so close that at least one of them would blast him with its cold snap, Randedly considered throwing away his plan A, until a voice alleviated his worries.
"Yet again, foolish disciple. I find you without a spear."
Randedly suppressed his grin. His sense of relief was strong enough to breathe a little life into his sense of humor.
"I was just biding my time, waiting for you to step on this grand stage and finish things."
Shaw snorted. Randedly glanced at him. Although Shaw was covered in blood, none of it seemed to be his, for there were no wounds on his body. Behind him, the woman, Marco, and Telif stood. Randedly didn't need to ask what happened to the other man. From the look in Shaw's eyes, Randedly also didn't need to explain the mustached man's absence. This level of casualties was expected.
"You have become dull from overtraining against weaklings. Since you were simply biding your time, you likely need no assistance to..."
"Obviously," Randedly said with relish, activating the roots he'd been so carefully controlling. The whole tower shook, and chunks of it fell away as the roots Randedly had been working within the stonework wiggled back and forth, destroying the binding substance that held the impenetrable stone together. The Yeti yelped, the ground beneath it collapsing, and it began to howl and roar. Not all of the tower collapsed, just large chunks of it, retaining the overall structure and shape. After all, Randedly was worried about whether the portal would be maintained if he destroyed the tower entirely. Plus, the core of the tower was made entirely of that material, and Randedly didn't even know if he could destroy it. He had certainly brainstormed this method to rid the upper floor of any obstacles. Some parts of the floor seemed to be like a half-built tower, where chunks of the material fell away after Randedly used his roots to destroy the mortar that held it together. The rest was relatively untouched, although randomly collapsed most of the lower floors, causing the confused guards who were still on them, fighting against the mini-Yetis, to crash into a heap at the bottom. Randomly did his best not to think about how many of those men and women died during the fall, although it was becoming increasingly difficult to avoid feeling weighed down by their lives. Their ghosts clung to him, digging their fingers into his exposed flesh, even through the chilling cold. Unwilling to respond to Randidly's small bragging as the judgment was sent falling to the bottom of the tower, Shawl simply walked forward with a snort. The others followed, although Telif gave Randidly a strange glance. Sighing, Randidly followed. He felt suddenly very tired, and it wasn't just the annoyingly persistent cold. At the center of the tower, they found a few mini-Yetis and the portal. On their approach to the flickering thing, the roaring from below grew louder. Shaw gave Randidly a withering glance.
Buy us some more time. If it follows us directly out, it might complicate things, Shaw whispered, and led the rest of the group towards the portal.
Almost unwilling, Randidly went back to the edge of an area where some of the masonry had fallen away to get a better view of the carnage below. It wasn't that he didn't believe getting rid of the judgment was a good idea. It was just, when looking down through the hole in the upper layer, faced with how he'd basically destroyed most of the floors, his mind veered back to the lives that had inevitably been crushed. Guilt surged through him, and an immature part of himself grew angrier and angrier at that repose. Randidly's face tightened.
Fuck. I knew what coming here meant. I had to kill someone to get into the prison, and although I avoided thinking about it, I always knew deep down I would need to kill to get out of it. So why?
The Yeti howled, done playing, and finally displaying the full majesty of a judgment. Bulbs of ice formed and bloomed all around it. Huge, draconic wings of ice stretched from its back. It bared its teeth as it raced upwards. Fury filled Randidly's chest, an urge to smash and smother his emotions. With it also came another part of himself, a part that had been mostly asleep for the past 2 years and was beginning to grow increasingly active. That quiet part of himself just sighed. He was only angry because he was afraid. Afraid of what he was becoming. Afraid that too much of the Telus culture was rubbing off on him and he would take those sins back to Earth. Even if he allowed that to happen, to grow more powerful, the cost?
Shut the fuck up,
Randidly whispered, his eyes narrowed. He raised his hand and shot several incinerating bolts. His training in that regard had paid dividends because they managed to make it through the wave of cold surrounding the Yeti and punch holes in its crystalline dragon wings. Its flight path faltered, the creature bellowed, and the temperature immediately dropped, as if in response to its call. Randidly threw down 7 more incinerating bolts, ripping hole after hole through its wings. But with the boost of the cold, the ice reformed. Although Randidly's attack stopped it briefly, it began to beat its wings, rapidly ascending. 2 floors away, it reached out its hand, 5 ice bulbs shooting upwards.
I said, shut the fuck up.
Randidly's voice was cold, and his eyes burned emerald. He pressed his hands together and called up Inspire. Its strange amplification rose to cover the whole of his monopool. Channeling his power, he released a veritable comet of an incinerating bolt, so massive and ruby that the snow-filled surroundings were dyed the color of blood. Chapter 83. Whereas there had previously been a powerful force pushing the temperature downwards, now this huge bolt, a car-sized, spitting battering ram of molten metal, incandescent and deadly, railed against the cold. With the power of Inspire, its heat pushed the frost back. Such was the proximity to the Yeti that its eyes could only widen, and a few dozen bulbs rushed to block the skill. The bolt punched through, and even as it cooled, it still remained a large, dense chunk of metal. It was so large, it was nearly the same size across as the Yeti's body. When it punched into him, both streaked sideways until the Yeti slammed into another tower, which trembled dangerously. Bits of the mortar flaked away. Then, both the bolt and the Yeti began to fall. Unfortunately, from the way the Yeti was blinking, it was not dead. Randidly couldn't really care. As his mana withered and stilled inside of him, cut off by the after effects of using Inspire, he only felt profoundly tired. It was time to go home. He turned back towards Shawl, who stood next to the portal, and felt a pang in his chest. To Randidly, home was Donnyton. But it was not yet time to return there. There was more to do here on this world for Shawl. Talif shook his head.
What was that strange thing?
A diversion, Shawl said coolly.
He waited until Randidly walked over and then beckoned to them all.
Grab each other's hands. It is the only way for us all to cross at once. Do not be shy. Come. It is time to break out of here.
The alarm sounded, and Helen looked up sharply.
Holy fucking shit! They are actually doing it!
Do not speak so quickly. Perhaps it is just another training exercise,
Develtian said wryly. But he was standing too, for the first time since they'd come here a few days ago, his expression a mixture of wonder and worry. The male spear attendant walked out of their small bedding area, yawning, scratching his ass. Helen restrained the part of her that wanted to rip him to pieces and settled on a scathing glare. That seemed to get the message across because the fool jumped and ran back into his sleeping quarters, putting on his armor. An explosion sounded from the prison portal area, and there were shouts in addition to the ringing alarm. Develtian's face fell.
They seem a bit more spirited than I would have expected. We must go.
He ran and leapt off the roof. Helen waved her hand and gathered all of their things into her interspatial ring, revealing a partially dressed male spear attendant, and leapt after Divot. A split second later, the other spear attendant followed, mostly out of necessity, Helen suspected. The coward didn't want to be left behind. They raced along the ground towards the high walls. Luckily, most of the guards were distracted by what was happening within the fortification and didn't notice their approach and ascent. They knocked the nearby guards out, careful to inflict no lasting harm. It wouldn't do to earn the ire of the first spear of Tomcat. Well, at least any more than they already would by doing this, Helen thought with a gleeful little smile. There they waited, while the commotion slowly made its way to their position by the gate. Only a minute later, Shawl ripped around the corner, followed by the ghost hound and two men and a woman. They all had grim faces, and the ghost hound's spear was covered in blood. As soon as they appeared, Develtian gestured wildly, and Helen and the male spear attendant began to heave on the wheels of the gate, opening it. After a few moments of exertion, they stopped, because all they needed were those few inches. The escapees ran forward, their speed filling Helen with a sense of awe. She couldn't help but notice how the ghost hound somehow seemed to become more dense. That was the only word she could think of to describe it. Not more compact, but more self-contained and controlled. There was also a strange, volatile energy to his movements she didn't remember, and to be honest, it made her eyes linger and stirred a certain kind of primal hunger in the back of her mind. Still, now wasn't the time, and she tore her eyes away from the lines of his lean muscle to scan the sky, which was convenient, for she saw a middle-aged man appear, looking down at them all as if he were regarding ants.
Impudent!
The word echoed out, and the sky suddenly filled with thousands of glistening spears, hanging over them like a death sentence. As soon as that image appeared, there was a snort. And that image was battered by the image of the apparition of death standing over them all, cloaked and stooped. That figure turned and gazed at the middle-aged man, its bony face locked into a crazed grin. Shawl sailed upwards, shooting to meet the middle-aged man, while the rest continued for the gate.
Ha!
Your image is as formidable as promised, Shawl of the Spear Phantom style. But as you are not yet an adept...
A strand of music filled the air, strangely beautiful and melancholic, like a lost child. Beside her, Develtian flexed his fingers. The middle-aged man was smashed to the side with a grunt, knocking him out of the sky. Although the blow was unexpected, he managed to regain his footing and landed softly on the ground, rather than crashing into it. He gazed at Develtian with a complicated expression.
You... That is not a style that belongs to the Spearman School. Sir Adept, who... Grok!
Once more the middle-aged man was interrupted as a spear pierced through his body. He looked on, aghast, at the apparition of death that stood mockingly before him, grinning. Shawl floated downward, his arms crossed. The middle-aged man's face tightened.
If you were an adept this whole time, why would you allow yourself to be imprisoned? I had my reasons, Shawl said coolly.
Behind him, the ghost hound and the other escapees passed through the gate and continued running. Develtian gave Helen a meaningful glance, and she grabbed the male spear attendant and leaped after them. Shawl regarded the man in front of him carefully. He was still the first spear of Tomcat, a very experienced adept. If he truly wanted to turn this into a fight... From the tightly controlled fury in the man's eyes, he was still willing to back down from all of this. Inwardly, Shawl felt some of his own fury begin to disperse.
We will leave now. Do not follow us, Shawl said calmly,
and the fury in that man's eyes sparked.
Who will pay the debt that is owed for the lives of my men? The first spear said, spitting out the words. Two adepts are powerful in tandem, but if you think I cannot overcome... In 6 months, if I yet live, I will return, Shawl said. At that time you may hold my life in your hands, a week for every guard that has died.
The first spear seemed to wilt, closing his eyes. True, this was a proud man, but this was also a man that had a deep, abiding loyalty for those beneath him. Tomcat was a proud town. A polished, strong town. Shawl and his student had done much to unravel that strength. It would be difficult to recover. Still, the temptation of having another adept beneath him was too much. The first spear nodded, which was for the best. For as Shawl turned and began to lope away, the dizziness started, his vision swimming. He gritted his teeth and made it through the gate. Shawl had heard the rumors, sure, but it was quite another thing entirely to feel the effects of ether starvation. It made Shawl wonder whether he would be recovered in time to exact revenge, if he ever had the chance to do so. Develtian fell in beside him, giving him a knowing glance. Shawl grinned as best he could.
You finally have seen the path. Congratulations on becoming an adept. If I had known, I wouldn't have barged onto your boat...
I wasn't, Develtian said calmly. Not until that student of yours produced that strange energy. It helped me see my image clearer than anything I have ever encountered. Compared to him, Spearman's tears are nothing, eh? But let us not speak of this. The fewer that know, the better.
Shawl fell into brooding silence for the rest of their run. Even as they passed the others and gathered into a larger group. They continued on for several hours, until they were at a small clearing halfway between Tomcat and Katal. They likely would not be disturbed there. Shoulders heaving, Shawl walked up derandedly.
Why did you kill the guard?
His disciple's face tightened, and he just shrugged helplessly. Shawl chopped down with his hand, faster than his disciple could react to, shattering the fool's collarbone. To his credit, Randidly didn't make a sound, and barely trembled from the blow, enduring it passively, which somehow made the punishment unsatisfying. Of course, Shawl knew his disciple had only done as he taught him. Shawl would have done the same most of his life, right up until the point he had gone into the dungeon and met Randidly. And seeing that innocent fool grow into this, it was hypocritical. And the path Shaw pushed for him would make this so, so difficult. But when he looked at him, Shaw wanted Randedly to be better than that. The rest of the group looked anywhere but at he and his disciple. The new spear attendant and the female one locked their gazes in a kind of standoff, attempting to determine their relative status underneath Randedly. Shaw struggled to control his anger and tried to clarify his issue.
As we exited, outside of the prison, there was a guard. You killed him rather than knocking him out, where you hadn't defaulted to violence before.
Shaw kept his voice low and even. In his disciple's eyes, he saw the whole story. The flash of bitterness, the anger, then the smooth resignation. When his disciple answered, his voice was low and casual in a way that made Shaw sick.
Yes.
If he didn't raise the alarm, it would be easier to escape. It was necessary.
It was necessary,
Shaw said slowly, savoring every syllable. In that moment, he didn't see his disciple. He saw an image far in the past, years after Shaw and his brother giggled and whispered about the spear with the poisonous fangs style. It was his brother, his spear wet with blood, standing defiantly over that young girl's body, Lucretia beside him. It was necessary.
You don't understand the value of a life, Shaw said coldly, advancing on his disciple, fury pumping through his veins like blood.
Chapter 84. Randedly burned with shame. He didn't understand the value of a life? Wasn't this all because Shaw made him swear to stick with him through this process? Wasn't all of this the repayment of his debt? When Shaw came, violence in his eyes, Randedly responded in kind, wordlessly activating him power and haste. His shoulder was already mostly healed, the pain nothing particular to speak of. If Shaw wanted to fight, that part of Randedly that sighed as he departed the battlefield with the judgment grew increasingly morose in his chest. Even the heat of the ghost hound couldn't warm it up. The Shaw Randedly faced now was very different from the Shaw he usually sparred with. Although Shaw was usually impossible to pin down, the current Shaw seemed to phase out of existence before Randedly's very eyes. This was Spear Phantom's footwork, at a level that neared 200. Randedly's arm snapped in half, burning a sharp flash of pain through him, and he grunted. He did not stop, because that was not how he'd been taught. Randedly lashed out with his leg, hoping to catch Shaw in the back of the knee, but Shaw was already gone. His other arm now fell limp, this time with the shoulder joint absolutely smashed to pieces. Shaw began to speak, his disdain clear.
Perhaps I have driven you too hard. I forgot how soft you started. 2 years of violence.
Shaw seemed to pause there as he once more disappeared and smashed Randedly's knees and ankles.
2 years of violence has taught you that killing is necessary, but not why. You are blind. You fear the killing, as you should, yet you resent your fear, and you kill more to show yourself that you do not fear. You wound yourself pointlessly, pridefully. Well, let me show you what you truly need to fear.
Shaw continued to systematically destroy Randedly's body, and Randedly grunted, tears forming in his eyes. This was all because of you, Randedly wanted to say, but his jaw was broken and his tongue was ripped. That old, slowly waking part of him shook his head sadly.
No, it's not, Randedly said to himself. You chose this. Accept it, or go mad.
When Randedly finally collapsed into unconsciousness under Shaw's blows, it was a blessing. Helen stood calmly over the body of the man she watched be tortured and eviscerated before her very eyes. Again, she thought it remarkable, both how peaceful he seemed while asleep, and the crazed violence that had been in his and his master's eyes earlier that day. There was some deeper lesson going on between them, but honestly, Helen didn't really give a fuck. After all, it wasn't like she was some fucking angel. Some lessons were hard to learn. Some lessons had to be taught the hard way. It was a violent world she'd grown up in, and it was all she knew. Strength was power, and power was everything. The ghost hound stirred, his eyelids flickering. His black hair had grown long in his time in the prison, hanging to his shoulders, and he now had a bristly beard like a jobless merchant. Helen's lip curled up in distaste. That would need to go if she was to do what she thought was necessary, both for herself and for him. When he awoke, Helen held up a razor and a bowl of cream, and cocked her head at him askance. For several seconds, she was held there by his emerald eyes, where a whirlwind of emotion seethed. Then it slowly settled. His eyes roamed over her, lingering quite long on her neck and chest. She held still, now actively trying to suppress the shiver. It was strange how much similar gazes from men had disgusted her in the past, and now she felt a hot sliver of enjoyment from the attention. Her mother always said she would understand the use of her looks someday, and, well, perhaps today was that day. Finally, the ghost hound nodded, and Helen moved close, trying her best not to wrinkle her nose at the abso-fucking-lutely disgusting smell. Holy Christ, had he bathed at all in his time in prison? Helen supposed that was a dumb question. She honestly couldn't remember the last time she'd bathed. They had been waiting for these fuckers to break out of the prison, after all. But there was a clear disparity between them in terms of smell, and it was a problem. One disgusting step at a time. A downside of increased endurance was how resilient the hair became. The ghost hound was no exception. She carved more than she cut, slowly cleaning his neck and face. After 10 minutes, she had mostly completed the process, and she leaned back, satisfied with her work. Again, she was caught by his gaze. With his dark hair, pale skin, and almost glowing eyes, the ghost hound regarded her, the look in his eyes turning decidedly hungry. Her heartbeat sped up, but she let nothing show on her face. She slowly cleaned the blades, taking her sweet time. Stroke by stroke, she wiped the last razor clean. The whole tent seemed to be pulsing now, filled with a strange need. Helen couldn't believe how much it was carrying her away. She tried to think of how covered in blood and sweat the man was, but all she ended up doing was looking up and once more finding herself pinned down by that gaze. It was a light green now, like mint and chemical fire. Helen took a calming breath and said, "Take off your clothes." She delighted in the way his eyes once more filled with wild emotion, need, panic, fear, hunger, confusion. It all passed, and there was a slow and sure confidence that filled his gaze. He smiled, confused and hopeful. "What?" Waving her hand, Helen produced the washtub she carried around with her everywhere. It was just big enough for a grown man to submerge himself in, and then she began pouring hot water into it. Helen's parents hadn't been rich, but they hadn't been poor, styleless folk either. She had some ways to procure steaming hot water at the drop of a hat. "You," Helen said simply, "are taking a bath." Randidly wasn't sure what he was feeling. He knew the bath felt very, very good right now. Shawl's words earlier, in a way, they were echoing so loudly around in his head he couldn't even hear them. Randidly's consciousness slipped under them, focused on other things, like how soft and warm his spear attendant's body looked in the dim light of the tent, how good the hot water soaked him as he scrubbed himself clean. He couldn't remember the last time he'd taken a bath. Even though it was becoming increasingly popular in Donnyton towards the end, he was too busy training with Mrs. Hamilton. Then he smiled and shook his head. From their perspective, very little time had passed. It had probably only been almost a month since he left Donnyton. It felt so surreal, the way time could change perspective. It was incredible. Releasing a long breath, Randidly allowed himself to float underwater. Then he emerged, stepping out of the comfortable water of the tub to the chill of the air. His spear attendant stepped forward, offering him a towel. Her service was strange, and the fact he was just naked in front of her was strange for a variety of reasons, the most important of which was it had been 2 years since he had seen her. He didn't even remember her name, and yet she so easily came forward to help him. Randidly didn't think he remembered her being this helpful, but he supposed he hadn't really had an experience like this before either. At least, if she was going to look at him naked, it should be now. It was a small, vain thought, but the system had done wonders to improve his muscle mass and definition. He didn't look crazy strong like he actually was due to the increased stats, but every inch of him was covered in tight muscle. The spear attendant stepped forward, a peculiar look on her face.
You know, thank you.
Huh? Randidly tied the towel around his waist. She frowned at him.
It looked like you could use to hear that. Thank you. Because of following you, I've seen many things I wouldn't have encountered otherwise. You might have involved me in the breaking of crimes, but in this world you don't advance without risk. Because of you, my path forward has been smoother.
Randidly's expression turned solemn as she continued to speak.
I've seen that haunted look you have in your eye right now. I know how it can destroy a man, because all you can think about right now is how you can destroy. But you build, too. You've helped build my life. So, don't think too much. You fucked up by killing that guard when you didn't need to, I guess, but you're still fine. The other good things you've done don't just vanish when you make a mistake.
Randidly's jaw clicked shut. She reached out, hesitated, then patted his wet shoulder. Then she coughed.
Okay, but after that?
What? Randidly asked, wondering what she wanted to do for him now. She frowned at him.
Make yourself scarce. It's my turn to use the bathtub.
Chapter 85. The next morning, as Randidly yawned and sat up, he admitted to himself that he'd been very emotionally irresponsible lately. He couldn't simply tough everything out. Better to deal with things in a smart fashion rather than brute force his way through everything. And that went for both physical and mental problems. His training in the prison ensured he had the tools to be able to handle most problems, but deconstructing them before he had to was far smarter and more efficient. He spent far too much time wasting his effort in the past. In that moment, Randidly resolved to be more intelligent about his fights. He looked around, but the tent was empty, and his heart felt oddly light. His hair remained wet from last night, and he still felt the guilt eating at him, but his talk with Helen helped. Shaw was a violent bastard for reacting that way, but he could understand why. Instead of dwelling on his prior actions, Randidly turned his attention to his status screen. He had only 49 path points to distribute right now, because he had used many immediately before they attempted their breakout, but what he paid attention to was not that number, but the level of his soul skill, Cycle of Ash and Rot. More specifically, he looked at how it had changed during his time in the prison. Randidly's mouth twisted into a grin. Randidly refocused on his path points, using 10 to finish off Fighting Proficiency 2. Congratulations, you have completed the Fighting Proficiency 2 path. The path ahead of you is long and filled with violence, but you stride forward with confidence. As you proceed, the sky begins to darken and a comet splits above you. A huge chunk of glowing metal crashes to your left, while several small orbs of power fall to your right. Branching path. Will you choose the large chunk of metal, or the smaller orbs of power? scratching his chin, Randedly wondered if there was something like a superior answer here. It probably depended on what the reward was. If it was a question of whether he needed a single powerful skill or several smaller useful ones, Randedly's strength without a class came from those skills growing. More skills, as long as they were useful, was probably better. Anyway, he already had several finishing moves in terms of power. Now it was just a question of training those moves to the point he could use them commonly in a fight. Randedly hadn't forgotten that he had his own runic rarity skill set, although he had left it rather untrained during his time with Shaul. After all, it was best to focus on the things under Shaul that would improve the most, and that was the Spear Phantom skills. Randedly opted to go after the smaller orbs of energy. You have selected to pursue the orbs of power. On the ground are three orbs, two gold and one clear. As you touch the clear orb, you feel a strange sensation of power and control fill you. Skill upgrade found. This powerful shard of energy can be used to upgrade one skill. You will be forced to imbue the shard of energy with an image in order to determine the efficacy of the upgrade. Warning: use on skills associated with a powerful image may result in an inferior product. Which skill will you upgrade? Randedly grinned. Not only was this a useful reward, but it also proved there were other types of rewards out there, not just things like health and stats. He wondered what other sorts of things could be upgraded. For his first upgrade, active skills would likely be a better target, just because he relied on them more directly during a fight. Besides, the effect on a passive skill might not be all that noticeable until much later, and Randedly was very aware that even after all these improvements, he had a tournament coming up that would likely push him to the limit. Although both haste and empower were active moves, they ended up being more passive in nature, and therefore discounted. The inevitable phantom arrives and the spear advances, ash trails, were probably already wrapped too tightly in an image for them to work. Spear Phantom's footwork and eyes of the spear phantom just weren't anything Randedly could get excited about. They would likely improve his performance further, and he was slightly worried about improving any spear phantom skill in general, so Randedly smiled. Ghastly Slash would likely work. He already used it a lot as his fast attack to throw off the opponent's tempo. If he could strengthen that, the knowledge he gained from Marco's tutelage would become all the more useful. The skill had been strengthened previously by his images to be changed to Ghastly from something, but it didn't seem like that connection was currently very strong. Randedly closed his eyes and focused his attention inward, in the veritable forest of ether engravings in his chest that caused him to have the ability to access skills. After a bit of searching, he located the one for Ghastly Slash, the lines of it burning white hot, but fading to blue at the edges. There wasn't really any way for Randedly to actually tell which was which, but when he set his inward gaze on them, he just knew. Then he looked at the strange clear energy in his hand, and it seemed like an empty snow globe, waiting for a scene to fill it. Breathing slow, Randedly focused on what he wanted. It was rather simple and direct, but for a quick attack, that was best. It was the image of a clock, its hands still. Then, powerfully, the hands moved. Tuck! The image was short and sweet, but the powerful echoes filled that clear energy shard. With his battle intent, Randedly made those echoes resonate, thrumming with power. Then, very gently, he pressed the shard of energy into the sky and felt something inside of him click. Congratulations, your skill has been upgraded from Ghastly Slash, level 59, to Idiosyncratic Cut, uncommon, level 59. You have absorbed the two golden spheres of energy, stamina plus 100, stamina regeneration plus 15 per minute. The golden energy spheres didn't disappoint either. Although his stamina pool was becoming rather difficult to keep track of, regeneration was always useful for prolonged fights. Randedly produced a training spear and used his new move. The singular power behind it made Randidly shiver. Then he tried it again. When he swung, as soon as he activated the skill, his spear resonated with those echoes, and a powerful ticking noise would be created. His spear would basically complete 1/3 of the swing instantly, which was impossible, but it happened. Randidly grinned, which meant he only needed to swing the spear 2/3 of the usual distance for a slash. As Randidly experimented, it seemed the power was decreased in a proportionate fashion, but this wasn't his power move. This was a move he would rely on to set up his finishers. After several cuts, Randidly found himself exhausted, his chest heaving. Curious, he waited until he recovered some stamina, which was rather quick now, and used the move. He grimaced. 75 stamina was a rather hefty price tag to pay. Well, Randidly supposed that was why the reward also included pretty large gains to his stamina pool and regeneration. Although he gained over 3 stamina per second and a pool of over 1,400, Randidly still wouldn't be able to regenerate through using this move very much. Randidly's available paths hadn't really changed, although he wondered about that. Most of the Spear Phantom moves must be at a high level before he could get a path in them. He supposed this made sense, as they were likely part of a skill set that was definitely not common in rarity. Between Engraving and the Weeping Cloud path, neither would have much of a concrete effect on his current performance. Well, Randidly did want to make himself some personal armor with engravings on them, but that was for later. And besides, the Weeping Cloud had a lot to do with his success in engraving anyway. Really hard to tease apart which would be more useful. Ultimately, he chose to put points into the Weeping That Falls Like Rain path, for a very simple reason. It was an uncommon rarity skill. Randidly was very pleased to discover that after he put 5 points in, he received a point in willpower. After another 5, he received a point in resistance. This continued until he put the 25th point in. Then he froze, his entire body trembling. A small burn started in his chest, which rapidly expanded into an inferno. Chapter 86. Warning, your soul skill has become unstable. If you continue to feed it, the effects will worsen. Calculating effects. Error, unrecognized soul skill, adjusting parameters. Expanding search. Isolating comparable soul skills. Match found, adjusting parameters. Calculating effects. Warning, death may result from the usage of an unapproved soul skill. Consult with the village spirit for further assistance. While the notifications appeared before Randidly, the pain in his chest continued to worsen. He closed his eyes and rode through the pain, refusing to fight against it, but also refusing to lose consciousness. He just let the experience flow through him. Every moment of what was occurring within him he could see, and he was worried that cracking down with too much force would worsen the situation. In the image of his soul skill, the constant rotation of grass, rot, and heat burning it all to ash had produced a thick layer of those small emerald crystals, which now filled the soil. At the moment, those crystals were glowing, emitting a strange green light, seeming furiously hungering for something. The power they emitted excited the forces of rot and ash, causing them to rotate faster, almost attempting to give those green crystals what they wanted. A powerful suction of force was created, drawing nearby items and Randidly's consciousness towards the soul skill. Fortunately, his actual skills seemed to be immune to the strange happening. Randidly looked wildly around inside himself, but both the small golden pellet he'd gotten from the lonesome spear path and that strange murderous death energy were completely still, locked in place by familiar tiny gold chains. Randidly's expression turned grim. Someone was forcing him in a certain direction. He wasn't quite sure exactly why, but he abruptly regretted choosing the Weeping That Falls Like Rain path, because if they were trying to get him to do something specific, because if they were trying to strong-arm him down a path he didn't feel was of his own choosing, well, Randidly wouldn't be able to help himself. After all, he did not negotiate with terrorists. His stubbornness wouldn't let him. For now, he could only stand still and bite his lip to keep himself from screaming. This was an entirely different sort of pain than Shawl's tortures, one that stemmed from the fact that the two forces which made his soul skill were rotating so fast it was threatening to tear him apart from the inside out. They pulled and pulled and pulled, and the suction grew and grew, but nothing was shaken free. Randedly's consciousness was relatively clean. After a time, the suction passed. The energy and light faded from those emerald shards. The forces of rot and ash slowed until they returned to something like their normal speed. Sighing, Randedly relaxed slightly. Whoever had caused this, well, he kept his face carefully casual in the aftermath, in case that individual could spy on him. After all, he hadn't forgotten about those hands within his body. If those hands were related to the golden chains that forced him to the reward for the carnage path, and had caused the reward to turn into a strange energy that currently hovered within him, it would lead him somewhere. And with gleaming eyes, Randedly hoped that at the end of the road, that individual was ready to play hardball, because he wouldn't hold back. He would break their plans and burn their carefully prepared path to the ground. Deep down, Randedly admitted he needed to let that burning resentment go, and carefully added the remaining 14 path points to the path. There was some activity, as the emerald shards pulsed, but it didn't set off a chain reaction which relieved Randedly. At least for now, he wouldn't have to experience that mental anguish again. After adding all of the path points, Randedly relished in the fact that he gained over 700 skill levels in his time in the prison. It had taken 2 years, so any less than that might be embarrassing, but it meant he experienced a huge amount of progress, both in terms of skill levels and stats. Most of that was in his combat-oriented skills, but he also had a large amount of improvement in the passives as well. Randedly looked over his status screen, pleased. Randedly Ghost Hound, class, dash, 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 level, not available, health, 556 out of 1,378, plus 8 buff, regeneration per hour, 498.75, plus 12 buff, mana, 12 out of 1,509, regeneration per hour, 134.75, stamina, 601 out of 1,393, regeneration per minute, 213, plus 4 buff. Vitality, 145, plus 4 buff. Endurance, 66. Strength, 111, plus 12 buff. Agility, 132, plus 12 buff. Perception, 100. Reaction, 90. Resistance, 77. Willpower, 115. Intelligence, 100. Wisdom, 56. Control, 200. Focus, 158. Skills, soul skill, the cycle of rot and ash, level 1690. Basic. Passive, running, level 52. Physical fitness, level 64. Spirit of adversity, level 49. Dagger mastery, level 13. Spear mastery, level 108. Fighting proficiency, level 81. Mental strength, level 19. Edge of decay, uncommon, level 43. Grace, level 39. Active, sneak, level 51. Dodge, level 59. First aid, level 30. Block, level 45. Calculated blow, level 64. Resistances, acid resistance, level 23. Poison resistance, level 21. Pain resistance, level 35. Curse resistance, level 9. Fire resistance, level 20. Mental fortitude, level 39. Utility. Farming, level 23. Plant breeding, level 9. Potion making, level 39. Analyze, level 24. Refine, level 20. Pathfinding, level 26. Map making, level 7. Sewing, level 11. Cutting vegetables, level 2. Manual labor, level 6. Digging, level 5. Cooking, level 29. Extract, level 6. Bacterial regeneration, level 64. Superiority, level 25. Mana engraving, level 60. Weather affinity, level 35. Clockwork mastery, level 7. Rejection, level 11. Stamina. Attack skills. Heavy blow, level 69. Sprinting, level 29. Inevitable phantom arrives, uncommon, level 68. Phantom onslaught, level 37. Sweep, level 54. Roundhouse kick, level 39. Idiosyncratic cut, uncommon, level 59. Pierce the skies, shatter the earth, rare, level 33. Body control, freeze, level 6. Boosts, iron skin, level 42. Spear Phantom's footwork, level 92. Eyes of the Spear Phantom, level 74. Phantom half-step, level 43. Haste, level 69. Spear deflect, level 22. Empower, level 77. Battle intent, level 61. Struggle, level 39. Second wind, level 39. The golden roots of Yggdrasil, ancient, level 4. Seven kata of the ashen spear, runic. The spear advances, ash trails, rare, level 17. Mana. Attack skills. Mana bolt, level 30. Spearing roots, level 32. Arcane orb, level 23. Magic missile, level 6. Healing palm, level 12. Fireball, level 33. Pollen of the Rafflesia, rare, level 23. Summon pestilence, level 53. Agony, uncommon, level 37. Incinerating bolt, level 64. Circle of flame, level 39. Boosts. Meditation, level 56. Mana shield, level 26. Root control, level 87. Mana strengthening, level 57. Wall of thorns, level 16. Polymancy, level 29. Weeping cloud, rare, level 56. Unique. Inspiration. Unique. It was hard to remember what it was like when he started out in that dungeon. Now he really felt like the system was an important part of himself. It helped him find his strength and his relationship with the world. Slowly he was growing as a person. Again, the image of those guards' bodies falling below, crushed in the tower as they escaped, appeared. But randomly forced it away. Not yet. He stood and stretched. Now was the time to find Shaul. His teacher challenged him the previous night, personally, in a way aimed to unravel randomly, to get at any flaws in his character. Luckily, it hadn't worked. But randomly wasn't perfect. He wasn't sure what to do with his talent for violence. He could only do one thing. Seek help from his elders. The first spear of Tomcat's face was grim as he heard the news. Most of the guards inside the prison were dead. It was confirmed the warden had been slain prior to the escape too, likely by Shaul. In addition, a strange creature calling itself a Judgment had set up camp in the prison and was waging a slow, cold war on the surviving prisoners who had banded together with the guards to survive. The creature was getting pushed back, but was a powerful mage and making things difficult. In addition, there was a constant flood of tiny minions from its position, which greatly complicated things. They were making headway now, but weariness was growing among the men in the prison. Although it was probably too late for the first spear to intervene, with the time difference, it was not an ideal scenario. The first spear tried to remember that no matter the losses, if he had another adept in his employ, he could recoup them. Except this was progressing past a loss of face. This was a significant blow to his city in a way that didn't make him angry, just worried. As he dismissed the guards, what was driving the first spear insane was the why of the situation. Why had Shaul gotten himself thrown in prison on a small matter in the first place? He'd read the report. Shaul's disciple killed a guard, a foolish move designed to annoy his officials, but because of the disciples' age and strength, they found it prudent to throw them both into the prison for the 100-year term. Let them strengthen there, then come out and be miserable from ether starvation for several months, at which point the first spear of Tomcat could recruit them. Why had Shaul remained a captive? The prison was not designed to hold adepts. Adepts could warden attack with their images without even moving. If one was an adept, escape was child's play. All the restraints simply blocked movement. If you were powerful without it, the cage held no meaning. Why now? Why were they moving now? At least for this question, the first spear was able to obtain some answers. The spear phantom style had to accomplish certain goals in the next few months in order to maintain access to the light blue color spectrum that Shaul used. But of course, the youngest generation of the style had to be the one to accomplish it. After a bit of research, it seemed that youth, a fellow called the Ghost Hound, made it through a qualifier and would be going to the Northern Regional Tournament. A top 8 finish there would be a sufficient result for the honor of the spear phantom style. Perhaps the prison was chosen as a training ground in order to give the youth real battle experience against other spearmen? Which seemed a reasonable method, if not extremely reckless, in that it offended the first spear of Tomcat, a slight he would not soon forget. But Shaul's face as he tendered his promise, this was not a reckless man. If anything, he came across as desperate. Sighing, the first spear beckoned a servant. There was one thing he wanted to investigate. Although he didn't know where the term was from, those who fought against the strange judgment creature testified it kept referring to a heretic, which stirred a half-forgotten memory in the first spear. He would consult with his contacts in Dearden and figure this out. Why had all of this happened to him? The first spear of Tomcat's face was grim as he stared down at the blade of his spear. His grip tightened. Chapter 87. Helen stood over the small stream, studying her reflection in the clear water. Always, her mother had pushed her into taking care of herself, encouraging her to exercise in order to sculpt herself in certain ways, to push her chest up and her hips out, to use oils and stretches that would make her skin soft and her body supple. Yet her beauty marks became bruises from long training sessions. She could imagine her mother's tut of disapproval, as though the woman sat behind her while ripping a brush through the tangle of Helen's hair. There were certain tangible benefits to her spear usage due to her mother's influence, specifically her 3 movements, that someone who hadn't taken such care of their body couldn't hope to mirror. And Helen slowly realized, as she fattened like a pig in the more feminine areas, she grew to resent her life, her mother, and what she saw as the path her family wanted for her. Still, she couldn't work up the nerve to directly contradict them, so she carefully subverted their efforts. She would not be a plump wife that was kept at home. She had gone above and beyond her mother's training regimen until her body was almost impossibly elastic and strong. Ellen never had the pure strength to rival some of the other spear users, especially those from the family she served, but there was a grace and control she had over her body which allowed her to hold her own. She even attracted the attention of a traveling adept, who gave her some pointers on the training movements she used. From that, she was able to create an uncommon rarity skill set that was all her own. Helen wasn't sure whether the interest was actually due to her skill with a spear or the lewd way that old man watched her practice. She couldn't bring herself to care. In this case, the skill set was worth some of the shit she sifted through to get there. Although it annoyed her parents, her success was such that she would not be just the wife of a leather worker. And then her mother began to set her sights higher, on the family of spear users they served. There were even several lesser disciples that had been interested. To buy herself time, Helen asked for the chance to enter the local qualifier to test her skill. Her parents assented, reluctantly, worried but tempted by the possibilities for marriage that a high finish would bring their family. Thus, Helen had traveled to Katal, quite far from her home, and the rest was history. Now she stood there, looking at her reflection in the water, her hands tracing the faint bruises on her shoulders and hips from the male spear attendant's spear in a moment of inattention. But for whatever reason, her mind wondered. The thin bruise and its sister from the follow-up attack looked like purple-black fingers. A hand grasping her and pulling her closer, kneading her closer. The ghost hound's strong hands as he...
Shit!
Helen splashed water on her face, wishing that delusion would go back to wherever it had emerged and just stay there. When she straightened and the ripples in the water faded, her reflection carried a smile. For good measure, she splashed her offending face several more times. Best to be thorough, ridding yourself of an unexpected pest.
Why do you smile, desert flower?
Helen cleanly turned around, punched Telef in the gut, his expression twisting into shock, and he doubled over, and then sauntered away. Randidly found Shawl sitting around a small fire, meditating. His master did not look up when he arrived, so Randidly sat down and began to meditate as well. Ever since he woke up, he felt wonderfully refreshed, and he wanted to hold on to this feeling for a while. He didn't supplement the meditation with root control. He just sat there, allowing the energy within him to gather. At the same time, Randidly reveled in the warm energies flowing into him from the ground beneath him. In that moment, he truly felt in tune with the natural world. The silence between them lasted a while, until Shawl opened his eyes.
You have overcome your fear? No. At the very least, turned to face it. You are a much quicker learner than I was.
Almost sighing, Randidly nodded. It would be hard for him to come to terms with the killing. It was both something necessary at times and something he would prefer not to do, especially if it was just for power. Even though without that power, he and the people he cared about might also die. The logic could not find an answer. There wasn't an answer. He would need to face every situation as they came and find his own answer. And of that, Randidly was not afraid.
Before you fight with the name of the Spear Phantom style, you must answer, what is the value of a life?
Shawl's tone remained low and harsh, and his eyes seemed to bore into Randidly. Randidly took a breath and thought for several seconds about it. Then he said,
a life is worthy of respect. My own life is invaluable to me, as every life is to the person it belongs to. To take it away is a grave disservice and a heavy burden, and...
Ha ha! Enough,
Shawl said, shaking his head. You are foolish, but at least you understand it is much more than you can handle to bear the weight of another's life. No need to bore me to sleep with platitudes. We leave in an hour. Prepare.
And just like that, it was over, with Shawl turning away and going to speak with the woman artisan who came out of the prison, and Marco. After some discussion, it seemed the woman was ready to go her own way and bowed to both Shawl and Randidly before leaving. As they gathered supplies, Randidly found himself face to face with Helen. Their eyes met. Randidly flushed, then opened his mouth to say something, but Helen, stone-faced, walked past him, whispering,
don't speak. I'm doing mental training.
Randidly quirked up an eyebrow, but ultimately shook his head and smiled. The best part about Helen was how direct she was, and how every part of her life revolved around the spear. He chided himself for the way his eyes lingered on her departing form, and resolved to share her constant focus. After packing, they loped forward, running to Catal. They were going to stay in Catal for a short period, before proceeding to the northern region capital, Dearden, which would give Randidly time to hand off some of the engravings he'd been working on during his time in the prison to Claptrap, and probably experiment with a few related things. They made good time and arrived at Catal in a few hours. Guided by a strange instinct, Divot led the way, moving towards his boat as if by sixth sense. They swiftly came upon it, only to find it had been taken over by a merchant who hung gaudy decorations and torches everywhere, making it look like a walking funhouse. As if not the least bothered by the fact that someone else was in his home, Divitt walked onto the boat and stomped his feet twice.
"The one who dares lay claim to this boat, come, raise your tassel, so I might sink it into the depths of the sea."
Divitt's words echoed, and several figures appeared on nearby boats, whispering to each other. No one came from his boat's interior. Divitt's face darkened. Divitt's party, almost wordlessly, began to toss all the shit that someone had taken great care to set up right into the sea. There were even some valuable-seeming equipment and materials, but under Divitt's furious eye, no one dared to take any of it for themselves. There seemed to be some dishonor associated with what was happening, so Randidly simply followed the lead of others and threw everything into the sea. Such was the value of the items that some people from nearby boats dove into the water and fished them back to safety. Divitt sneered down at them and began dumping more stuff onto those people.
"If they fucking want this trash, let's help them drown in it," Divitt said, and the spear attendants jumped to it with alacrity.
Helen began to throw heavy items at the swimmers quite effectively. At one point, she seemed to knock a flailing woman unconscious, who then had to be rescued by another swimmer. Rather pleased with the situation, Divitt gave Helen a pat on the back. Shawl beckoned Randidly over as the game continued with enthusiasm.
"This is one of the rare times I shall say this, but rest. Once the fights start in Dearden, they will not stop for a week. You must prepare provisions and materials to last you at least that long. Be thorough. The competition is difficult to survive."
With that rather confusing tidbit, Randidly headed down into his old cabin, which was filled with barrels. After moving them all up to the deck, he settled into the small wooden room and began to breathe. He grimaced. It was strange being here. His golden roots of Yggdrasil couldn't reach up through the water, so he felt oddly tired all of the time. Still, it seemed Dearden was on the continent, so at least there wouldn't be that problem during the tournament. Randidly carefully removed his last remaining bracer engraved with a shadow rune of over 60% efficacy. He looked at it for a long time. It was true he knew there would be problems with the engraving guilds, though the small-time nature of the things he was doing would likely mean their response would be too slow to catch him before he went back to his own cohort. But the shadow rune was possibly different. Some of the effects from it... And this was the most basic version. Randidly made the decision not to share his ability to produce the shadow rune with Claptrap. It was likely for the best. Besides, considering the new varieties of runes Randidly obtained, he didn't think Claptrap would have any complaints. Randidly began to consider four specific ones: the gazelle, which added agility and perception; the ox, which gave vitality and endurance; the dolphin, which produced intelligence and control; and the praying mantis, which would assist in willpower and focus. With these four, in addition to bear, fish, and dragonfly, he could cover a lot of different stats at once. Before he actually began to engrave, Randidly read some of the technical guide left to him by the willow tree spear-style matriarch. To Randidly, the knowledge was pointlessly obtuse, but he pressed forward, feeling absurdly like he was studying. He had been able to read some during his time in prison, and as he pressed forward then, he was able to finish the first volume of the set. He didn't feel any different, but he definitely knew a lot more about how to layer energy in deep curves and how it assisted the efficacy of the engraving. Then, after he finished, Randidly snapped the book shut and checked the time. It had almost been 24 hours since he used Inspire, so he would soon have access to his mana once again. He headed towards the deck to engrave. After all, the soft rain of the weeping cloud was part of his process now. It was a part of what was necessary.
Chapter 88. Randidly went to the far side of the deck, keeping as much space between him and the crazy ones throwing armor at people swimming in the water.
Around 30 minutes later, as they continued dumping items, something inside of him relaxed, and mana began to pool within him once more. After a time, he wiggled his fingers and 1,000 mana left him for Weeping Cloud. He sat cross-legged and began to engrave. Using the greaves, because that was what he had the most of remaining, Randedly tried each of the 4 new runes. It wasn't a long process, as his control and efficiency in manipulating the mana within himself had improved overmuch, which Randedly believed to be a product of his leveled battle intent. Something about that mental weapon carried over to engraving, and he was able to do it far more efficiently. Although this was just his first time for each of them, all came out with an efficiency in the high 30s, which was disappointing in a way because they had very little value to Randedly below 40. He supposed he shouldn't be too put off. His first attempt all that time ago turned out below 20, and each additional point could only be earned by the weight of repetition and experience, as his understanding of engraving grew. Almost as a warm-up, the next engraving Randedly did was a Shadow 5. To his delight, it reached a 67% efficacy, his highest ever with that rune. He was without a doubt progressing on understanding the method for smoothing and filling the energy in a way that made him slightly excited. His mind was still so clear, and he focused it to a razor edge. Now was the time. After breathing and steadying himself, Randedly began to engrave, far more carefully and thoroughly than he had done with the previous engravings. Not because he wasn't taking them seriously, but because he honestly didn't understand the nuances in those runes yet. It was impossible for him to tell which portions were important to emphasize. That was why engraving was such a tedious process. The important areas in the runes were always different. Sometimes attention should be given to the swirls and curves, making sure they were smooth. Other times you needed to focus on the straight stretches, making them immaculate. It even found, for some, the extra effort should go towards places where the lines cross, ensuring that energy at that location was exceedingly deep. There were a million small details that couldn't truly be learned through the manuals, though they would make the information retention easier. No. The foundation had to be made through effort and repetition. And in terms of engraving, for Randedly, the dragonfly symbol was the one with which he was most familiar. While the rain fell on his skin, prickling like tiny chilled needles,